Chapter 8. The Twofold Panacea. The Logos has granted every human being who has gained a soul two healing remedies, with the help of which all the evils of the body can be cured. These two remedies are the radiance of the soul and the sanctifying spirit. However, this twofold panacea will only have its full effect if one has set it free within one's inner being. In other words, the key issue is a process of self-healing. All other methods of healing known and applied in this world, whatever they may be, are always partial. Even the cures and sanctifications brought about by Jesus the Lord and other great ones of the Spirit. This is immediately apparent, for instance, from the words Jesus the Lord spoke when he cured someone, "Go and sin no more." If the person concerned had fallen back into his old way of life, the difficulties would have returned straight away. Sanctification is only complete when the three, spirit, soul, and body, are united in an absolute sense. So that is what the aim of the candidate in the Gnostic Mysteries should be. On this point, the utmost confusion prevails and tremendous divergence is apparent, owing to the very crystallized state of the modern human being. He is governed by anger and irrational desires, and orientated totally towards nature. His entire life is determined by the radiations of the aeons of dialectical nature. While we are on this subject, we would like to draw your attention to the chakras. There are seven major chakras, as well as a number of minor ones. The seven chakras cannot be specified as being material, but are present on all levels of the personality. On the material level, they are in a gaseous state. In addition, they are unmistakably etheric, as well as being active in the astral body. An exception to this is the pineal gland, which is a unique organ. This endocrine gland can be detected on the gross material level because it is an organ in the head, sanctuary, but at the same time it is connected with the crown chakra, hence its powerful radiation. The chakras, which are also sometimes called wheels, each of which has its own task, are constantly in motion. Seen from within, they turn clockwise from left to right, and they attract various astral forces in harmony with the individual state of the person concerned. Through the rotation of the chakras, these forces are converted into ethers, and in that state, via the etheric body, they are transmitted throughout the bodily system. In addition to the seven major chakras, there are at least 42 minor ones, which together form a network of 7x7 power centers. The astral body, the etheric body, and the material body are very intimately connected, so that the astral state is transferred to the etheric in a fraction of a second, and the etheric state is imparted to the material body just as quickly. How does this come about? Primarily through the field of life surrounding the person concerned. The pineal center, the crown chakra, also functions as a center of respiration. Various powerful forces, differentiated into positive and negative aspects, first enter the pineal center, and from there are distributed to all the chakras, both major and minor. In other words, all these forces are constantly being supplied and dispersed throughout the system. Radiations, forces, prana, aeons of dialectical nature, of whatever kind, determine the human being's entire state of life. These currents of forces give rise to particular states in the astral body. And all those turning wheels, which rotate at different speeds depending on their function, convert the astral forces into ethers, which are then introduced into the physical body. In this way, conformity with the laws of dialectics is maintained in the body, and if the consciousness derived from the body has supremacy in the system, indeed, as is the case in 90 out of 100 human beings, the microcosm is plunged into a constant fall, into the rotation of rising, shining, and fading into a perpetual death. And the soul, which was introduced into this remarkable system at birth, is drowned in all these vital fluids of the body. The best proof of this is that the human being possesses a waking consciousness and a sleeping consciousness. During sleep, the gross material body lies resting, while the etheric double and the astral body, though remaining linked to the physical body, leave it to do some globe-trotting in the reflection sphere. When the more tenuous part of the personality leaves the physical body during sleep, this generally happens via the chakra that roughly corresponds with the spleen. The state of sleep is complete when the etheric double has been driven out of the spleen. When one looks at the etheric double of most people, it is, more often than not, a horrific sight. One can dress up and cultivate the physical body to a certain extent and adopt a pose of civilization and culture, but have you ever heard of the etheric double being cultivated? People are not quite able to do that just yet. Of course, there are systems for titivating the etheric double somewhat, but the ordinary person does not know about these methods, and that is just as well. So the etheric double usually reveals the true shape of the body human being, and anyone who sees it will gasp in horror, for in the form of the etheric human being, all the degeneration, fragmentation, and chaos of the nature-born human being come to the fore. After that first glance of horror, one is seized by boundless compassion, for it could have been quite otherwise. However, first of all, the soul must be born, the new soul state must awaken. A radiance, a light, a radiation emanates from it. This radiance of the soul gains a hold on all the chakras, the 7 major ones, and the 42 minor ones. In this way, the radiance of the soul gains a hold on the physical man. It enters into battle against the wrath and lusts of corporeality, against all the inclinations of the human being. It also engages in combat against the various vital fluids circulating in him, holding him in their thrall. In this way, the first remedy begins to work. So all those chakras, great and small, are rotating in specific processes. All kinds of forces and currents are constantly propelled into the personality and released within it. The person is driven along his path through life. And now the soul enters the scene and the radiance of the soul. This radiation, this light of the soul, undermines all the processes which make the human being ill and keep him in a state of bondage. The remedy begins to work. And as a voice coming to us from tens of thousands of years ago, Hermes tells us that when the radiance of the soul begins to shine, this gives rise to fierce pain. And how could it be otherwise? The moment you dare to say yes to the soul, you cause a fierce pain throughout your system. And we saw how, fundamentally and in principle, the downfall of the bodily human being is immediately retarded by this remedy. The activity of all those chakras, the impulsion within you via the chakra system, bulks of all those forces of nature, is leading you towards death. And now the radiance of the soul makes its appearance and causes all those processes to stagnate. Try to imagine how human beings are constantly slipping and sliding as if at lightning speed into the mud, into nothingness, and see how, through the touch of the soul, this process cannot only be slowed down, but even the impossible standstill again can be achieved on the negative path of death. This has to do with a remarkable change and a movement occurring in the chakras, which rotate in a clockwise direction from left to right. Through the radiance of the soul, it is possible to slow down these rotations and then to bring them to a standstill and ultimately to make them begin to rotate again in the opposite direction. When this happens, the person's conception of the world and his inner disposition change completely. Through the changes in the operation of the chakras, he enters a new world and becomes a totally different person. As soon as stagnation begins to be manifested in the various chakra processes, and the radiance of the soul is thus successful in a pupil, the attention of the person who has been seized by the soul is drawn to the fact that the greatest sin, and thus the greatest of all deficiencies, is the God-denying life, and that the two, being the soul and the body, must therefore strive for the influx of the Spirit, that they will have to make room so that from then on the two will be three. Why must the two become three? Why must the physical human being too fulfill an important role in this process? Well, it is because of the pineal gland, which is not only an astral and an etheric organ, but also a physical organ. The pineal gland is physically demonstrable. It can be designated anatomically. Once the soul process has made a certain amount of progress, once the fragrance of the soul, the radiance of the soul, can be perceived in the system, and the system is thus undergoing the effects of the first remedy, then, first and foremost, the pineal gland will need to open in a new way, for it will be necessary for the candidate to begin to inhale a totally different prana. Without that, he will not be able to go any further. A totally different form of respiration will need to develop. The pineal gland will have to become open to the influx of the seven spirit. The seven rays will need to enter together and support the unfoldment of the soul process. When the three have become one, the spirit will first have to sanctify, to heal, the entire system. And that is the second panacea needed for transfiguration. Transfiguration is the great restoration. It is the ultimate goal of the Gnosis. It is the supreme aim of the Gnostic spiritual school. It is the alchemical wedding of Christian Rosicross. And this is the archgnosis of Hermes Trismegistus, to assail, in principle, the personality by means of the radiance of the soul, opening the pineal center for a new respiration, for the influx of new vital forces, new vital fluids, which straightaway begin their healing work. In the modern spiritual school, the attention of the group is constantly being drawn to this mighty process, in various ways and with ever-increasing emphasis. This causes an inner perturbation which many pupils experience largely as a burden. But why this emphasis? It is to make you realize the absolute necessity of the tri-unity in your state of life, and because the radiance of the soul is active to a certain extent in the majority of the group. The two, soul and body, are linked, but we cannot remain standing at that stage. The school must go further, because only then will it be able to begin its essential work. For we are not forming a soul school, but we are called to form a spiritual school. There are more than enough soul schools and soul training programs. There are great multitudes of people who are being held back from an impending fall by the radiance of the soul. As a result, such people are seriously concerned, for instance, with ethical requirements. They want to rise above the animal and yearn to bring mankind together into one great, glorious soul community. Our group, too, can count many such soul people, admirable and full of integrity, among its number. But you should realize that now you have to go further, that you are called to the kingdom of God, the kingdom of the Spirit, and that kingdom is not of this world. Flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. The fact that there is currently such a serious outbreak of criminality and debauchery among mankind should surely make it clear how necessary it is for a spiritual school to be formed once more. Do not make your soul state into a sorry state. The soul which has become a soul is a basis for further building. Are you already standing on the square of construction? Are you taking soul requirements, soul values, and soul forces into consideration in your life? Well then, go on building. Devote yourself to the spiritual school, to building the link with the spirit within you. The presence of the radiance of the soul is a requirement for a pupil of the Lectorium Rosicrucianum, for the radiance of the soul endows you with the faculty of discrimination. See how beautiful and glorious this is. When the radiance of the soul is active within you, you will always know what is wrong. Then you will have received the faculty of discrimination between good and evil. Some people do not have that, but then neither do they possess a new soul. As soon as there is a new soul, there will be the ability to distinguish between good and evil. And you must listen to it. You must constantly take it into consideration and accept whatever consequences arise. And you will have to develop your own morality, your own ethical code in keeping with the radiance of the soul, for it imparts to you the ability to discern the true character of the nature of death. Without this ability, the human being is just like the animal devoid of reason. And, as Hermes says in verse 8, the same things will happen to him as to the animal devoid of reason. And in verses 8 and 9, to which we would like to draw your particular attention, Hermes goes on to say that the reasonless activities of passions and desires constitute a boundless evil, and that over these souls God has placed the law as castigator, that they might become aware of their wickedness. The radiance of the soul is not only a panacea, but as an activity of the holy law, it acts at the same time as a castigator and accuser. One of the results of this is that when a person has experienced soul birth, he no longer has any inner peace. As soon as he experiences the radiance of the soul, everything that is dark and has to disappear is driven to the surface, and he no longer has a single second of peace. Then the radiance of the soul not only causes the pain of purification, but also acts as an affliction, because the person concerned is brought almost daily into what amounts to a conflict of conscience. The conscience is the accuser, and the conflict of conscience the castigator. How many times have you endured the consequences of this? Almost every day? And see how you go on experiencing it, time and time again, day by day. So you find yourself in a state of never-ending disquiet, in a constant inner turmoil. Why? Because the soul being is something quite different from the nature-born human being. The two are in constant conflict with each other. Disquiet, self-accusation, yearning, hope, and despair alternate incessantly. And the fluctuating tensions in turn give rise to all kinds of physical difficulties, true joy, true fulfillment in life, and the inner peace which could have been the result remain very far away. The sole human being cannot be in a state of equilibrium. That is impossible because his connection with the bodily human being results in contrasts that are too sharp. That is the reason why, in the course of the ages, mystical systems of an occult nature have been devised with the aim of causing the sole human being to lose himself in all kinds of mystical reflections through the forced penance and subjugation of the bodily human being, with thick prayer books as little presents for the soul, morning, noon and night, night, noon and morning, reading, reading, reading prayers, and exalting oneself in meditation. While the bodily human being, piled like a worthless rag in the corner, is not used, but only afflicted and tortured by all sorts of penances, the subjugation, the forced subjugation of the body human being. Even if one can well understand such efforts, they are still utterly wrong. Although in practice, and in the sunken state of the nature of death, the physical human being constitutes an acute hindrance for the soul, an intense stumbling block, yet nevertheless, he is also called to a magnificent, sublime task, as the task of raising himself out of his fallen state through transfiguration, and becoming the exalted servant, the tool of the spirit soul. In the 13th book, in verses 10 to 15, there is a conversation between Hermes and Tat about fate and destiny. This part is quite remarkable in that it throws a confirmatory light on much that is expounded in Gnostic philosophy. The universe is manifested by means of natural laws which govern the courses and rotations of stellar systems, suns and planets, and thus also apply to the fullest extent on our planet Earth and the various life waves manifested on it. These laws operate by means of radiations. The entire network of chakras in the human organism is nothing else than a system for receiving and assimilating radiations. Thus, in this respect, the personality can be compared with an atomic reactor. There are three groups, three orders of radiations of vital currents. There is one that relates to the physical human being, one that has to do with the soul human being, and one that concerns the spiritual human being. Thus, the human being exists in a certain state of life in which his physical destiny, his fate, is fulfilled. That is why certain radiations have access to him, and so he undergoes the fate laid down by natural law. Not the fate that began at his birth, but the fate that was already anchored in his microcosm prior to birth. For the pineal gland has a very powerful grip on the material body, and also a unique connection with the etheric and astral bodies, as well as the auric being. Everything that was inhaled and assimilated in a previous existence by the personality that then inhabited the microcosm was afterwards, at the end of that lifetime, returned to the auric being. It is on the basis of this situation originating in the past that the inhalation of the pineal system develops at birth. In this way, it follows one continuous line, one continuous destiny, the destiny of the nature-born human being. If such a person breaks the elementary laws of nature that apply to him, he is corrected by them, and his destiny then becomes his fate. Then an inescapable power will hold sway over him, bringing him into a situation or state of being he has neither willed nor desired. When the pupil enters, when you enter, the world of the soul, and in this way you link yourself with a quite different order of radiations, which begins to exert its influence on you, they will disturb and weaken the radiations of the physical order with their natural laws. If you keep going, if you persevere to the end, you will thus take leave of your current death. Tiny, and the course of your fate will be obliterated, but if you remain in the state in which, on the one hand, you live the life of the personality to the full, while on the other hand you allow your system to be disturbed by all kinds of soul radiations, thus calling into being the intense turmoil we mentioned earlier, well then you will make your fate even worse. Then some compulsive state will develop into which you have maneuvered yourself. That is why both soul and body need to live within the sphere of the soul radiation through one's disposition, through positive and consistent action, and by means of a high morality. As soon as you dare to say an absolute yes to the soul, the grip of fate will decrease and ultimately cease to exist. Then the entire system will have to be entrusted to a third order of radiations, that is, to the seven spirit itself. In the great process of development, not a single entity can avoid the suffering caused by the purifying and severing action of the twofold panacea. That is why Hermes Trismegistus says in the 15th verse, "It is impossible to escape from change, just as it is impossible to escape from birth, but he who possesses the soul can free himself from evil." That is the path you must follow. If only you persevere with determination and vigor, you will truly come home.